This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well. We are now live broadcasting.
Mark, we did it!
To the world. Hey, Bill.
This is our first time meeting in person, is it not?
Yes, and we're so far away from each other.
Yeah.
We got room for... It is the time of the convention. Do you think we should address the empty chair?
In the room? Oh, like Burt Reynolds? Not Burt Reynolds. Who was that?
Yes, it was Burt Reynolds. Remember when he was like...
Clint Eastwood.
Hey, monkey. Was he in a movie with a monkey in the 70s?
Probably.
Was Burt Reynolds in a monkey movie? Or am I... Did Cannonball Run have a monkey in it?
The second one, maybe. I feel like between 1973 and 1983, there were just a prodigious use of monkeys in television.
Yes, yes.
You got your chimps and your orangutans just showing up in random. PJ and the Bear.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, rightly so,
because, I mean, those were times when we were thinking about what it is to be human.
When we didn't think twice about exploiting primates for our entertainment.
I mean, is it exploitation if it's funny?
I think those are mutually exclusive. I think we can talk about humor and exploitation without... But this is fun, Mark. We finally were live at the I.O. Theater in Chicago, Illinois. Listen to the crowd.
Yay, yay.
Okay.
And this mic, this audience mic, both of you at some point will use that mic.
All of you. Don't say both. All of you at some point.
The plurality. The word audience. That could be an audience of one, right?
When you started your sentence by saying, the word audience made me think you had something deep philosophical, like it's Latin for audio, sound.
You got it.
Sound and ints.
You did it.
Sound observer, sound.
Those that hear the sound.
Those that hear the sound?
Probably.
Okay. Any Latin? Anyone from all of our audience? Latin? No?
Which
okay.
is, you know, ironic because before a certain point, they didn't have sound in theater. It was all just silent theater before they developed the technology to get the sound from the stage to the audience.
I think they just talked really loud or wore masks with big faces on them.
Yes, that's exactly why. Because the ancient Greeks, they had their big masks. And They weren't able to actually say the lines. The playwright had to stand offside while playing the zither,
okay,
and recite the stuff. And
you had the chorus saying things, and it's more than one person.
That's right, okay. So
a whole chorus of people who could then say the thing. You know, Mark, we actually have an arts educator in the audience who probably knows so much about ancient Greek theater and all those traditions.
Are you saying we've vamped enough and we should bring up the guest now?
I think so, yes.
All right, introduce the guest.
We have a guest today. I said arts educator, but so much more as well. Mr. James Whittington is in the house. Here it is. With all this roaring applause. He's making his way to the microphone.
James Whittington. Can I call you James Whittington III? I think that would just sound a little more regal.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Why not?
Is he lying? Are you actually an arts educator or what?
I am actually an arts educator.
And this means that you educate the arts.
Yes.
The arts themselves.
Yes. No, I teach a variety of arts to a variety of people.
Theater mostly, yeah.
Yeah, theater. Theater.
Okay.
Theater, storytelling.
I thought the vagueness
acting.
There was covering up something illegal.
Oh, no, no,
various,
no, no, no.
Various arts?
Various arts.
Safe cracking?
Yeah. I mean, that would be a pretty sweet art to know.
Yeah. You don't come across many safes, though.
No.
I did get my kid as a recreational thing. They have these locks that are completely clear. And then you get a lock pick kit.
Oh, so you can see what you're doing.
Yes. And the irony of the whole thing was due to some logistics, I think that he was going off to college. He never had both the clear lock and the lock pick kit in the same place. He never actually was able to put the lock picks in the fake lock. I don't even know if I could recreate the series of events that separated the two. It was like they were, screaming across a crowded train and then the car's part. It was that level of epicness.
So did he? So he never used it.
Next time that he wants to break into a real lock, he will be woefully inept.
Unprepared. Okay.
We are in person here, and this is strange, and this is sort of a philosophical. The problem with this. So I was reading Maurice Merleau-Ponty on embodiment, and the thing is, usually when somebody makes a big point. To those who are not familiar with the history, it sounds really obvious, which is we perceive the world through our bodies. We're in the world. When we think about stuff,
okay,
we have bodies. Mm-hmm. And why would you need... Well, because you're reacting to centuries of people like Plato who are saying, body suck. Transcend your body as much as possible. Be okay. A purely spiritual person. Descartes, I don't even know if I have a body. Maybe an evil demon is deceiving me and I'm just a pure spirit. So you'd think that the point would not need to be made that you have a body, or at least, you know, there should be something very, very specific and practical to come out of it. But you could read a lot of pages of Merleau-Ponty before you get to any particular practical advice.
It is her point that we do have a body.
That all knowledge...
that I'm touching my body
is
now.
Embodied, yes, okay. Yes. And this gets expanded by other philosophers, feminist philosophers, including that we all speak from our social station, our particular place, and therefore the judgments that we make about things might not be as objective and impartial as you might think.
Okay. So, is this anywhere, like, is it too surfacey to say, like, well, like body language, you know, even for like a philosopher, would they, you know, someone who's like transcend the body, are they saying also transcend body language? I should be able to just with my words, you know,
right.
Cold pure, words on paper
pure
are just
rationality.
As good. Pure rationality.
Right.
Cold words on paper are just as effective as Barack Obama. On a stage,
how
talking
poignant.
To people.
I guess effective for what purpose? Are we trying to...
Politics.
Dupe people? Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Dupe? Oh, wow, Mark. Wow, you've played your hand. Dupe. Barack Obama's duping people. Wow. Okay.
Yes, if we're... Aristotle wrote about rhetoric that, you know, this is actually his primary way of talking about, of analyzing the emotions is about in speeches, how you get a rise out of people, how you get them to... feel this or that.
In their bodies. Feel in their bodies.
But it's very much separated from actually expressing truths. If you want to bring in, if I'm going to influence you with my emotions, with my body language, with my sheer attractiveness, then probably I'm doing something a little fishy if I'm trying to convince you of the best school board policy, for instance.
Okay.
As came up in Obama's speech. Not that exactly. But
Yeah.
So, yes, weigh in from the arts educator point of view before we make you act out a scene involving
us. Oh, good. Great. Oh, do I think we are our bodies?
We just went through the pandemic in which bodies were not actually present in classes, particularly with arts education. I would think that would be a little difficult.
Oh, it was a nightmare. It was a lovely nightmare. A lot of very awkward Zoom situations. I taught in a Zoom improv class where one person refused to turn on their camera. That was chilling until that person eventually said, listen, I was just here to meet people, and then said, I'm just going to check out, and then never returned.
I appreciate their honesty.
Yeah. No. I can really appreciate the fact that they were trying to do something new, and what they got was something new, and there they are. Yeah. So I wish them very well.
Sure.
Did you have similar as a teacher, as an educator yourself?
Yes.
In the improv world, you were still doing things though on Zoom. And it seemed like, I mean, actually I'm starting to teach a class now strictly on Zoom.
Okay.
And that allows me to include people from many countries. And I don't think they miss seeing my full body. I didn't design it to display all the angles to get the smells.
Well, I'll tell you, I as an educator, especially like teaching improv classes or any kind of theater thing, it's like, your body may be the single biggest, it verifies what your words say, or it undercuts what your words say, how you stand, how you say it, where you are. It has a tremendous ability to undercut or agree with what's going on. And the best actors can, without noting, with it just casually say their tone, their words, everything points in one clear direction. And I think if you want to confuse an audience, say something very meaningful, but don't have your body support it. And they won't believe your words, or they will believe your words hesitantly. Does that make sense a little bit? Like, I'm the president. Welcome to the White House. It's like, are they really the president? You know, there isn't like, okay, I believe they're the president. They won't believe you, or they'll believe you hesitantly. And that's really powerful.
This reminds me of way before I was working in a space with actual budget and we would have to rehearse plays in my living room.
Okay.
We had what was called the cat test. So I would be rehearsing plays in my living room. And if the actors weren't true to the actual topic, so if they weren't actually angry, if they were not accessing those, my cat would just wander through and sometimes just jump up on their lap and go to sleep. And it was a sure sign that they weren't being true to the moment. Registered, no, this is still safe. If you were really angry, they would have not even come into the...
Yeah.
Do we have any cats that we could use for this?
Let's find out.
Yeah. Cats don't speak English. They're not going to hear the words, Mark.
I mean, so you say. how do you know? My cat seems very much, when I swear at it, when I tell it it should die soon because I'm annoyed at it, it takes those to heart. It grieves for days.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a way of trying out insults.
Sure.
I mean, it has no recourse to the law or therapy or other human beings that it can tell on me to. So it has that advantage. But it seems like this whole, I guess we should explain to the listeners that even though we're on a stage, we're tied down by technology. We have to talk into these goddamn microphones.
Yes.
That are on big stands in front of us. And yes, we could have arranged something else, something wireless, something headset based or chest based, but we did not do that. I just brought all my stuff. And so we're splayed around here like some kind of science project. And so we cannot get up. And in fact, apparently 3 years of doing this, we've not been doing improv because our bodies have been irrelevant, more or less.
Well, they have. And even they've been a little relevant. We can still change our voice. You know, we can change our tone. And we can see each other on Zoom and see a little bit about it. But I think, Mark, this is going to really pop. I think you're going to be blown away by the meaning we can convey live that we could never convey over Zoom.
All right. Really pop like that pole vaulter and his improv where he really popped and he knocked the bar down with
his genitals.
Is that where we're going?
So something like that. But, you know, if you feel the need to get out of your seat and do something, we can describe. We're still on the mics.
Okay.
So I'm just...
yeah.
We have another mic, in fact, that's set up over there for the audience. So there is some room for improvisation. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Perhaps we should get to some of that.
We can do it.
The idea of the not having your body language or your tone, your vocal, something match the information that's coming out of you. Is there some way that we can make that?
Yeah. Hey guys, welcome to the party. Welcome. We got chips and things, drinks, whatnot, you know, for free. Help yourself.
Thanks. Really glad to be here. I've been looking forward to seeing your place. You know, I don't make a lot of friends at work, and the fact that you invited me, I'm tickled pink.
Your house is much nicer than the way I thought you had described it.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Just beers in the fridge. Help yourself. Anything. And you got chips and whatnot.
Man, he's so cool. He just like says chips and whatnot, and it's just like nothing to him. Did you import these?
Huh?
These are Nostratonios. I've never even heard of this kind of chip. Where'd you get these?
She's at the store. They're at the store. I don't know. Just, hey, it's a party, right? Let's have a party.
Let's have a party. I don't feel comfortable even opening these chips. I want to wait till somebody else opens them because they look too nice.
Yeah.
It's like a work of art.
Are we the only people you invited?
I invited a lot of people.
I mean, if you have a public event and only two people come, I mean, that's a little...
I mean, I'm honored. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah,
I'm honored.
Yeah.
I'm honored if you only invited us.
No, and everybody, okay? I invited everybody. It's a party. All right? Two people's not a party, okay?
Well, there's three of us.
Well, that's the host.
When does it become a party? When does it become a party?
Like five or six. I don't know. There's more than one conversation going on. That's a party.
James, I don't know if I'm even... He's really just so cool. I feel like I should just sit quietly and watch the proceedings. Isn't that what you would do in a public event that only two people come to? You know, normally somebody might feel insulted by just being asked or having the social situation imply that you should just sit there not participating. But I feel such of a lower stature compared to him that we're going to
be over here in the corner.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's if you want to get pizzas or something, we can pass the hat, you know, or.
Could you order it? I want to see him. I so want to see him order pizza. He's so fucking cool.
Oh my God. Dynamic.
Can you just, can you call up the pizza place and let us watch?
Huh? You want to watch me order pizza?
I mean, yeah.
You can use my phone.
Just like the grace.
It's fine. I'll order pizza. What do we want? Cheese, pepperoni?
You decide.
Yeah.
Something fancy. Something like you usually.
Is this fun for you? I mean, are you having fun?
Isn't it obvious? Yeah, yes, very, very much so. My gestures match my face, and my thoughts match my mind matches my ex. I don't even know if I have an internal thing going on. It's really all out here. That's just kind of what you bring out in me.
Okay, you're having fun?
If you're having fun and you're having fun, I must be having fun. That must be the feeling I'm experiencing.
So you have a feeling you're yeah. presuming is fun, but you're not.
Yeah, it's this setting or crying. So I'm going to assume if I'm not crying, this must be fun.
Okay, I'll order very cool Papa John's or Domino's or whatever.
Yeah, you decide. You decide. I just want to hear you lay it on with them. I want to hear those words, those very carefully chosen. All right. Here we go.
Yeah, this is Papa John's. Yeah, I'm having a party. We probably want pizza or probably get this call.
He said
all
probably.
The time.
He doesn't. Do you hear this? It's like the birds. You know, I'll probably feel a whole lot better when you're gone. Because like he doesn't know. He doesn't know for sure. He's gonna feel.
One cheese and one pepperoni, lard. Do you have any deals or no? Oh.
So he doesn't even say like one cheese pizza. He says one cheese. Like, what does that even mean? Isn't cheese like a collective noun?
Yeah.
Like audience?
How long? An hour? It's going to be an hour, fellas. Is that okay?
Okay. Great. I mean, if you got more to entertain us with.
Yeah.
I mean, I just mean, you know, express your vibe. Because I think being here in person.
Where is everybody else? Why did no one come to my party? Why are you the only ones here?
Should we tell them?
Yeah. I kind of deleted your emails.
Huh?
Like to everybody in the mass email you sent?
Yeah.
Kind of went in and just removed everybody.
What? Huh?
For and more? If you, I got to show you the outside of your door. It says, plague. do not enter plague.
We got some police tape.
You spiked my party? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, we just didn't want to share you.
I bought all these chips and beers and everything.
We'll help you eat it all.
I wanted to have a party.
We could even take it out on the road. We could go together as long as it's the three of us in your car. I want to see the inside of his car.
Oh, gross. No, who wants to see the inside of somebody's car?
I mean, we do.
What?
Even the trunk would be fine. If you want me to ride in the trunk, I just kind of getting on in there.
I thought it'd be fun to have everybody at the office at the party. And no one was showing up. Then you two roll in like 20 minutes late. And I just was like, what's going on? And then I find out that you all tortured, sabotaged my party?
We were late because, you know, we came early to put up the thing on the door. And then we had to go to, I heard that Geraldine was going to come. So we had to go to her house and slide her tires so she could not get here. But I guess if you want to, you know, take it on the road and go see her, she'd probably be
yeah,
really stoked.
Surprise.
That's a terrible surprise. That's horrible. I was going to ask Geraldine out. We've been like super friendly at the office. And this whole thing, to be perfectly, was a bit of a smokescreen to give myself an excuse to be.
I totally want to see him make his moves on Geraldine. Let's go. Let's get in your car, all of us, and go to Geraldine's. And we want to see. Make this happen tonight. Make this a special
night.
We're
going to be in the back seat. We're going to be in the back seat.
Why are you making this more awkward? This is horribly awkward.
I thought, you know, because you won't have to tell us about it later. We'll witness it firsthand.
We'll be there.
Gross. No. What's going on? Are you having fun now? I'm not having fun.
This is the most I've smiled in like a year and a half.
Oh, weird.
Seeing this.
I'm going to have to show up at work somehow and just convince I don't know. Y'all, this is fine. Let's go on the road. Why not?
Okay.
Why not?
All right.
I hung up on the pizza place. No idea if it's coming. We may as well go out and just do something. All right. How about that?
Great. Right. I got to put my shoes on because I took them off just when I came in.
Well, thank you for being so polite taking your shoes off when you came in.
All right. Geraldine is going to be so surprised that we actually.
We're not going to her house. We're not going to Geraldine's house. We're just going to a bar or something. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, in any case, since we actually do have the plague, that's going to be a really cool surprise. I think that was sort of the signal that we should end that. Once the plague comes up, then the scene is over. I think.
Did you break character?
I think it's the
rule. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
My podcast brand is more or less founded on the idea of self-examination and its perils. And I'm guessing that you listeners also fancy yourselves pretty self-aware individuals, or at least you recognize that that is something to shoot for. So it's kind of ridiculous that I've never had any formal therapy. Anyone who's curious about what's going on in their heads might want to try it. In my case, either things have never seemed quite bad enough, or I just didn't want to make the effort to find a therapist, have to go there every week. So since I'm having to record these ads for BetterHelp, I have decided to give it a try. I've just gone through the application procedure, which is a brief questionnaire to get you matched with a licensed therapist. What do you want to get out of therapy? What do you think is wrong? And of course, there are no wrong answers. Just curious is an option. I know that with BetterHelp, if you don't mesh with your therapist, they will connect you with someone else very quickly at no additional cost. BetterHelp is entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. So whether you're just curious about therapy or you think, you know, I really should be diagnosed for some of the things that I do, you might want to join me in giving BetterHelp a try and let me know how it goes. Rediscover your curiosity with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/improv today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/improv.
With hundreds of doors across Houston, you can get expert care everywhere.
That's the difference between practicing medicine and leading it. Houston Methodist, leading medicine.
So I did it, Mark. I was trying to have my words not match my body.
And we didn't understand. we deflated
your disunderstanding was so aggressive, I felt it demonstrated an understanding.
So you thought the characters were being deceptive?
Being intentionally obtuse. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Clearly you were being, yeah, James was.
Wait, you were not?
I don't know what the inner lives of my characters are. My characters only have an exterior. So there's no way to match there.
So you just claimed that your body is relevant in this situation by that very.
Wow. Wow.
Well, I think what we showed before is that even if we haven't been in person, the fact that we are doing this not via text.
Sure. Wait a minute. You guys usually do this podcast by text?
That would be hilarious. Yeah. Yeah. And then just have like some robot voice reading the text. Yeah.
That's going to be the new thing is we're going to make a transcript. We're going to have the robot voice read the transcript.
Yeah.
And we're going to release that as a YouTube video and have it animated or whatever.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
All right. If either of you wants to volunteer to do that work,
many of
please, you, please do.
Do that.
Do this whole philosophy thing about body and whatnot. This theatrical take may be a little tangential to that, or it may be just, you know, one step on a 100-step journey. But like, are we close with this, or is this just two different things that sound similar?
We're playing with the idea of embodiment and how this can affect, you know, because you always want to know when there's a philosophical theory like this, what exactly is the point? And part of it has to do with, you know, the feminist point I was making about don't assume that your judgments are objective. You're making it from a specific point of view from, you know, and usually this is put in terms of class or something or your background as opposed to your physical body. On the Partially Examined Life, we had an episode on racism and policing where we read some of this Merleau-Ponty and the sort of training that they put police officers to not immediately react in a super racist, super reactionary way.
Work up to the racist. You got to work up to the racist. Right, right.
So the idea, right, if we say that things are embodied, that means they are subconscious. We're not just like interpreting the data.
Sure.
We are reacting on a visceral gut level to what's around us. And of course, that matters a lot in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not quite as much in podcasting.
Yeah. James, I have a question for you. As an arts educator, as a theater educator.
Yes.
You keep saying that in such a strange way to me, but go ahead.
I'm just really just pumping you up.
As an arts educator
mm-hmm. In the aesthetics.
Yes.
Somewhat, yes.
Okay.
I certainly have encountered students who are very thinky. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And either don't have problems accessing or don't feel they should access their instrument. Their physical instrument, their body, you know what I'm saying? To just really
their physical envelope.
That's really snotty as we can. Yeah. How do you convince someone that they should explore
How do you coax somebody? Well, how do you encourage someone to act physically, use their instrument? A lot of it is making them turn their mouths off and have to be dynamic in a scene and convey information without speaking. Can they still say the same information? And
sounds like we better do an entirely silent scene for a podcast.
Here it comes.
I've encountered something where there can be a disconnect between what are you doing with your body? Well, I'm doing an activity. I'm cutting someone's hair. I'm clipping coupons. It's something with scissors. No, how you hold your body, this whole kind of psychological gesture.
Yeah.
That kind of, are you familiar with this concept, Mark? The psychological gesture?
Go. No, just tell me more.
Okay. You as an arts educator, use your chance.
Oh my God. So there's just this idea by Michael Chekhov.
He's famous,
by the way. He is famous. Cousin to Anton. And he essentially, it's the idea that if you motivate and you practice and you create these physical gestures, it's not that you're walking around making these gestures, but you start really broad and it's a lot of movement to start off with, and then you start to metabolize it. And by that, I mean you sort of bring it inside. And so it's still this internal rhythm that you are acting out or being aware of, and it helps to motivate the way that you act in an improv or in an acting scene.
That was really intense. I was just going for, you know how certain people always do certain things with their bodies?
Yeah. That would be the other definition.
Yeah.
I think that has general applicability of why do we wear the yarmulkes? Well, it's to have a physical reminder of, so you have these external things that you do. We're going to engage in rituals because that's going to set my mind in some way that is desirable to me.
That's kind of like the, what am I doing, a ritual, or what am I wearing? But this idea of like, how is someone sitting? Are they slouching? Are they holding their fingertips together? Or are they crossing their fingers? All these little things. Are they bouncing their fingers as they hold them together? These little ticks and things that are incredibly meaningful. And any, Dana Carvey, anyone who does impressions is always looking for it's not just the voice. It's they can stand a certain way, the 1,000 points of light, Dana Carvey doing George W. Bush, all these like these physio psychological things that are kind of related that can be used, as you said, James, to reinforce your motivation. And who is this person? How do we identify this person? And it isn't just, I stand here. I pick up stuff from the ground. I cut hair. It's like, how do you stand? How do you pick stuff up? Do you just kind of bend down and with one big swoop, just swoop it up with one hand? Or do you, with your index finger and thumb, be very daintily pick something up? So this idea of like, we can express identity through how we do these things.
I keep thinking about Johnny Depp is famous for using that type of acting method.
Sure.
And we could all probably agree there's a big difference between his character in Pirates of the whatever.
Caribbean.
And Edward Scissorhands.
Totally.
There's a massive, it's not just because he's now leading with his hands, right? There's something internal that is motivating the external.
Yes.
In such a way that it is different.
And it can create this feedback loop. Yeah. We're just doing the external thing and get you in that mindset and whatnot. Yeah.
Here's another practical application of the Merleau-Ponty embodiment thing is disability rights and having sympathy with somebody who is disabled. Because that Edward Scissorhands, he had trouble with the push buttons on the phones. There are just so many things. Very good with the topiary, apparently.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Apparently. Did you see the movie?
It's been a while. And sometimes I'm, because he was sort of an inspiring character, I'm like, what would Edward Scissorhands do? And then I, just poke at stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. pretty much that's what he'd do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And cut himself accidentally. Stuff like that. Is that when people are really into what would Jesus do? They're like, how would Jesus wait for the bus? Would he be like, bus is going to come. I've got faith that bus is going to come. Yeah. I'm not worried that it's late.
Everybody's looking down the street. He's looking the other way. I know what's coming. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Technically, though, if you were Jesus, would you even be there?
what would Jesus do now? Well, Jesus is
I would expect
the bus driver, whoa, like every time they get to a stop. Well, no Jesus this time.
Not this time, but maybe the next time. Keeping faith.
What would the faithful bus driver do? That's a good good little thing to put on your arm. So we're out of topics, right? There's no more topics. We're just done.
Oh, God. All topics. Are we,
I don't think we're off topic. Well, back to this thing that you mentioned about, like, are we in our bodies, you know? What would be the case for, no, our bodies are real, but to the extreme, to the point where it's like, I think that might be a little too much. Like, our bodies can remember our physical cell. You know, like, have any of you heard, you know, any of those concepts are ringing any bells, Mark? Or is that just too...
I mean, I could see, could you see, right, if you're like, I can't learn things unless I'm in the room with the person.
Okay.
It would be the corollary of, oh, I don't learn well over Zoom. Nobody learns well over Zoom. So I have to physically go to them and I have to engage with them. I mean, this is educational theory, like John Dewey, folks James. Like that. We should not.
Arts educator, not.
Careful, yeah. He did not do the Dewey Decimal System. That's okay, a different person.
Different guy.
Yeah.
But very much into the how do people learn. They definitely don't, you know, give them a list of stuff to memorize. That's not great.
Yeah.
They're not merely information dumps. They're interactive beings. And so you got to get them with their hands doing some things some feedback, maybe some electroshock. I mean, that's not part of Dewey's recommended practice, but I would think that it does follow from that. That's probably good. Do you find...
electric shock to be helpful?
Or just, you know, hey, you're not... I think that's the cat is sort of like that. I mean, if the cat would claw your nads if you don't do the thing that you
wanted.
Well,
the cat, I don't bring the cat in.
Oh, okay.
Hold this cat, and if you're actually angry, the cat will be upset.
I'm going to throw the cat at you.
Yeah. It's not my, I'm going to shake this cat up and throw it at you to see what happens. Yeah.
I mean, if the cat's into
that. Kinesthetic learners, is that what we're talking about?
Yes, I guess that would.
Okay.
I don't want to say it's too far because I don't want to yuck someone's yum. You don't like that?
I like the power of that expression. I hate that expression.
Yeah.
Well, I think as a real kinematic, the reason you want to be in a room with the celebrity, you want to be at the concert instead of just watching it on TV.
Totally.
Because you got to be able to taste them.
What are we talking about now?
That would be a little too far.
Well, there is something, you mentioned like celebrity is a real thing. I bet, you know, there are, I would, you know, go on a limb here, but every culture in the world, every human being has some concept of celebrity or fame or something, or this person is more important. And just being in the same room with them is special or meaningful. I could see that being a human thing. You know, like a real thing. I know certainly at this theater, the IO Theater, Chicago, Illinois, every now and again, there will be someone of note who comes through, or a former alumnus or something. And it isn't necessarily that, they've got a new show or they're reading from their book. It's like, no, they'll just be in town. It's a sold out show. Just to sit in the same room with them is somehow meaningful. It's not the same as just being on television or they have to perform. If Taylor Swift were to say, hey, I'm having a concert. I'm not going to sing any songs. I'm going to sit on stage. Read the paper, do the Sudoku, you know, Sudoku, whichever it is. I think people.
Sudoku!
I think people would probably, like, I'd buy tickets. I'd pay $15 to sit in the same room with Taylor Swift for an hour.
I mean, that's kind of.
It would be more than $15.
I saw John Cleese in a theater recently, and that's pretty much what it was. It was kind of like, yeah. Let me answer some audience Q&A. I'll show some Monty Python clips. You like me, right? You like the fact that I'm still alive and can
but that's kinda
be
it.
In a room with people?
I saw, months before he died, Kurt Vonnegut was at the public library, and he freely admit that I am so old, I am not doing anything of value anymore other than just being here and just halting in speech. But it was meaningful to everybody just to be in the same room and somehow clap for. I get to clap for him, and he gets to hear me clapping, you know, and he gets to participate in all the joy he's brought us reading his books. You know, there's something there, and I don't know.
You had sex with Kurt Vonnegut, didn't you? Oh, is that what you're saying?
Come on.
For $30.
I was still on the line of what is too far is like the groupies who would be like, I don't want to just witness all the rock stars. I want to collect them. You know, this is perhaps not an option for people today. But in the days before disease, back in the 60s and 70s, it seems like this was a thing that happened. Yeah. The collectors. I've always found it weird to just seems inefficient when one person is talking and then thousands of people are just focusing on them. Like, really? They're so important. We got to do that. Like, you know, talk amongst yourselves. Do something like that. So I think in the spirit of that, we have this mic. Does have any thoughts come to the mind of either of you? I don't want to really put you on the spot, but if you want to get up and contribute something to the conversation, if you have a question, even if it's totally irrelevant or a thought, you would be welcome.
With hundreds of doors across Houston, you can get expert care everywhere.
That's the difference between practicing medicine and leading it. Houston Methodist, leading medicine.
Okay. I have someone coming up here. Right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Tell the audience your name here. And
my name is Bill, Chicago, Illinois.
Hi, Bill, Chicago, Illinois.
Hi. This is kind of a dream come true because I've listened to your podcast, The Philosophy Side, for a while. So.
Not this podcast. Just to clarify.
Well, your whole universe, Mark.
What the hell's going on? I want to hear more about your hatred for the phrase "yuck my yum."
Yuck and yum are kind of childish words, and like yummy, you know what I'm saying? It's like, to me, that's what a child would say. The fact that they both begin with Y is only, it's like, there's no fun fact. You know, it's just an accident of the English language that fun and fact are start with the same letter. It kind of rings a little, I don't know, childish or dismissive. Yeah, hey, whatever it is, you yum, I'm down for it. So I was like, don't say my passions aren't my yums. Gross.
Now, Bill, I don't want to fuck your yuck, but I think that
does that make sense, or am I being?
I heard it was from a first grade teacher. She used it all the time.
Well, thank you, first grade teacher.
She used it all the time.
It is a good piece of advice to small children of like, do not disrespect.
Yeah, yeah.
And she had a very diverse classroom, so it's important.
Oh.
Food's coming from different, you know, Serbian or...
Okay.
Wait, if they go yum, do I have to say yuck?
Please respect the autonomy and cultural differences of your fellow students. Yeah. I think that's more efficient to say that.
Mm.
So, and I did have one other follow-up question, if that's okay.
Please.
About this idea of having knowledge without using your body at all, that seems very abstract to not use your body. And that's, I see a movement towards embodied cognition all over the place. So what are your guys' thoughts on that? It seems to be swinging more in that direction.
Right. And one of the places that this comes up is like, is artificial intelligence actually possible? Could you actually develop a knowledge of the background information that you would need to get along in the world and make correct inferences about questions you're asked if you have not been moving out in the world among things? Do you know what space and time actually are? Have you experienced these things? It's sort of a general, there's a famous philosophy of mind thing about Mary the color scientist. This woman has been kept in a black and white room her entire life, but she's given all these books about color. And so she knows every physiological, every fact, anybody's ever said about color. But yet, when you actually let her out of the room and she beholds the beautiful green grass, does she learn a new fact? What is the thing that is added?
Don't they have some color blindness correcting lenses now, or some color blindness aiding glasses that they can? Maybe we can do this experiment. Finally, we can do this poor experiment without torturing poor Mary.
Yes, I bet this was not actually done.
I think experiencing the color is different than reading about. We've all read about other countries, but when you go travel there, then you get to experience it. And it makes it real. It makes it like the first time I saw on my extensive world travels. No, but just like, it's like I've seen a million pictures of or movies of Roman columns or something. And through a strange twist of events, I happened to be in Switzerland, and I was walking with the guy who lived there. I'm like, whoa, is that a Roman column? Oh, yeah. It's, you know, 2,000 years old. And I'm just like, I was shocked. I'm like, oh my gosh, there it is. One of the million, how many Roman columns are there in the world? You know, but it literally stopped me in my tracks for a second. He's like walking down the street leaving me because he sees it every day.
Yes, you did not know what it was like to take a Roman column for granted. That is what you've learned.
Is there a pun in there? I feel like there should be a pun. I don't know. Am I fooling myself? Did nothing happen to me? I'm not saying I learned something that I could write down, but in that moment, it's real. It's, hey, I saw John Cleese. Hey, I saw Kurt Vonnegut. Hey, you know, oh my gosh, that's him. That it's for real now. Back to what I was saying earlier about you can say everything, but when people see you performing and you're really, really acting really, really well and supporting your dialogue with your body, it just, it resonates. It's just like, you've had a chance to see really, really good actors on stage before. It is so powerful, palpable. And I feel like we just don't get that opportunity, especially as regular people, to see really, really good actors do their thing.
So I'm so glad you came to the office today with your, as you know, at Experiences R Us. We try to expose you to the things that you've long read about, you've heard about, you've perhaps seen in the films. And we give you firsthand, as much as you can afford for your budget, a experience of these things. So, Mr. Latilda, you had some strange things on your application. Can you tell us more about what you'd like to experience?
Well, you know, I recently saw the movie Total Recall. And I have been thinking about wanting to experience an off-Earth experience, another planet.
Okay. Are we talking about the original Arnold Schwarzenegger or the reboot?
I will.
Okay.
I have to tell you, you're going to experience right now what the man in Total Recall did, because you are from off-planet.
What?
Everything before this moment has been, you have been conditioned to forget your time off-planet. So just like the man in Total Recall, you're now experiencing the fact that you were off planet.
Hold on. I'm calling my wife. I'm calling the woman who says she's my wife right
now. Yes, you should probably divorce her right now.
I am. I'm right now. Yes. Hello. Yes. Yeah. This is not working out. What? Okay. She agrees. All right.
That was very clean. And now you've experienced, you probably heard about the biphone divorce. And now you've gotten to experience that. So it's we are going to charge double for that. Did you have something?
You just divorced your wife?
Oh, yes. This isn't real. Nothing prior to this was real.
We're taking this too far.
Let's look at your application. What did you have? Can you tell us?
I just wanted to be underwater, to swim underwater without, you know, a scuba tank.
Well, you can do that. You know you can do that.
Why? But for longer than I could hold my breath for.
Oh, okay.
Like a fish.
So you want to be a fish?
I don't want to be a fish. I want to know what it's like to be a fish without being a fish.
All right. So
how close can I get to fish before I'm a fish?
So like a mermaid.
A merman? Is a mermaid a half fish? What is a fish like? I want to be a fish.
Well, now I'm confused.
What is it like to be a fish? That's your question. Well,
yes.
If you've ever had a fish in a bowl, for instance, it is profoundly bored. It has very little to look at. We're going to start with that. We've got a box in the back, and we're going to just have you sit in the box, and then occasionally some sort of flakes will come down, and that'll be the height of your day. And we're going to do that for maybe 3 weeks, and that's the start.
This feels like exposure therapy.
Yeah.
To be a fish.
I want to be in the water. I want to float. I want to be buoyant. I want to swim and feel what that's like.
Okay. So the fish, they have gills.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to, before we put you in the box, I've got a rusty razor here, and we're going to just make some gill-like, because this is what you want to be like a fish. I mean, fish, they get caught by the hooks. They feel all these things. You want to feel like the fish. It seems like you want the good parts of being a fish without the bad parts of being a fish.
I thought you could have just told me I would have been a fish this whole time.
That's ridiculous.
And that the fish that we know of aren't actually fish. We're the fish, and they're yet some other more viscous medium.
I mean, if you want to be all abstract about it, I think we should live in our bodies and have our bodies experiencing the making of the gills with the rusty
the fish don't
blade
get cut.
Just like
that's not what a fish goes through.
Have you ever seen a fish being made?
Gross.
I mean, no. No. Wait, what?
We make fish here on a weekly basis, at least. And the fish, they do not enjoy it. So maybe I just want to advise you, consider a different fantasy. Is this what they would do on Fantasy Island? They would say, look, I know you want to have sex with the beautiful women, and I know you want the adventure, but that sort of sucks. And then they bring in the people that have experienced these things, and they say, actually, the pleasure was very fleeting, and now life seems meaningless. It would have been better if I just had a 9-to-5 job and kept my hopes low. So consider, like, as if that just happened to you about the fish.
Done.
Okay.
Done.
All right.
Fine.
Do you have anything that you'd like me to experience?
Well, you work here, so
a refund? How about that? How about like processing a refund?
I've heard about such a thing. I think we will try it right now.
Okay, all right.
All right, so...
Well, no, I'm good. I just divorced my wife for no good reason, so I'm okay.
All right, I think that's enough of that.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, so...
What percentage of people on Fantasy Island were just like, I just want to make it with a supermodel? Just pages and pages and pages of people applying to go to Fantasy Island.
Does either of you remember enough Fantasy Island plots to fill us in... I just remember a wax museum, something like that, of people being, corpses being covered in wax. I don't know why that would be a Fantasy Island plot, but it was. It definitely was. And I know, you know, Tattoo was very excited about the plane.
Didn't the devil play some hand in an episode or two?
I feel like, yeah. That was back when sitcoms used to have the Halloween episode.
Yeah.
It'd be like a special thing. Oh, the Family Ties Halloween episode or whatnot.
So I think we're hitting on a different philosophical is, you know, we did experience Fantasy Island, but we experienced it so damn long ago that we no longer feel that embodied connection to the world of the Fantasy Island. We merely have the traces, the remnants, and that's ultimately all we walk away from this life with. All right, we got the philosophy there. That's like an hour. Any other? Do you want to say anything? Come introduce yourself. Come introduce yourself.
Another audience member. Yet another audience member.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Are you an alcohol? No, you don't have to tell us. Okay.
Hey, no offense to our second audience member, Matt, but I'm going to attempt to read what he said because the stage mic was apparently just not recording a signal. He says,
can I do a little riff?
Yeah. Do it.
Sure.
Since we're in phenomenology world with a Frenchman, how about an approach to improv? We start off very platonic, right? You come on stage. There are little objects, but I feel like the good improviser is the Heideggerian that starts thinking, what are my relationships to these things? This could lead into a whole phenomenology of theater, maybe.
We are always already acting in the theater. We're just, by going on stage, we're just making explicit what is already implicit in our everyday behavior.
All the world's a stage. No, but I think you're saying this idea of like, and you used a philosophy word, I'm not 1,000% comfortable with, Mark might know.
Phenomenology.
Yes. Descriptions of experience. Or in the case of Heidegger or Merleau-Ponty, it's actually even stuff that's sort of prior to the grounding of experience, something like that.
We had a ton of that today. I just didn't know the word for it. Outstanding. Yeah.
It's a way to sound fancy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I would say, I agree, like certainly training improvisers, there can be a thing where it's like, at first, they may only hear the words or maybe think of the words that are happening. But as they do more, they start being able to experience more. They're seeing their partners, not just hearing their words, but seeing their postures, seeing their bodies. And the same thing would probably be true with objects as well, and interacting with objects in the world and giving meaning to the interactions of the objects and able to express themselves through handling objects.
Yeah. I would think it also starts to fall into this. What you're saying is something I've heard it described as the emotional message, which is made up of your body language, your tone of voice, your facial expression. But then one that I really appreciate and try to work into my classes is this idea of proximity. How close we are as we speak actually says so much about our relationship and our dynamic.
Yeah, that's a huge one. I would agree. Eye contact, do we withhold it? Do we give it? When do we give it? I think a lot of meaning can be all tied up in there. Yeah.
I find that when I teach improv, I also have to remind students there's nothing real here except for their partner. And I love object work. I love object work. But I do have to remind them that there's no scissors. There's no phone. There's no cat, no cabinets. It's only the person who's on stage with you. And you have to figure out what's happening, what the tension is between these two people.
We need to tell the people listening to the recording that we just edited out James to demonstrate this, pulled out a razor and shaved his entire body. I thought it was a bit much and certainly didn't work for the audio medium, but it was an experience that I've never, I think we can all wish that we did not have that.
Yeah, put your shirt back on. Yeah.
All right. So who won, philosophy or improv? That's the question. Do we have any votes? Raise your hand.
Well,
let's make our final cases.
Let's get the house lights
make
up.
Make our final cases.
So we can see out there.
I mean, you guys were just saying some good things about improv. Is there anything to sum up? Additional notes on the particular scenes or anything like that that you want to add just to make your case as strong as possible?
We hear the words, but what we're really seeing and experiencing is the embodiment of the words is what is truly impactful.
So it's the accent that the words are spoken in.
How they're saying, experiencing someone saying that. How they choose to convey that those words is, why not? 90% of the impact. Why not?
This makes me think, though, about how in improv scenes that are different from regular human interaction, our first scene where you threw a party.
Yeah.
Our job is to make you continue to feel that way, right? If not feel worse. Our job as improvisers is to make you feel worse and worse. In real life, I think we would have been concerned. I would hope that we would have been concerned.
I really liked, so we sort of started, we've talked about in terms of improv, like how many points of view are there in the scene? And that I adopted this aggressively cheerful thing. And initially, you were on board with that. But then you made it very clear that you had no idea how you felt about anything. And I thought that was a really cool choice. I think I'm having fun. I don't actually know what fun is.
Yeah, then you start spilling into how much does one character need to reveal who they are in order to push the scene forward too.
Okay. I think philosophy won, Mark. I'm just going to say it.
With phenomenology.
Well, with phenomenology.
Which is maybe, a PH word, by
this
the way.
This is like the Nixon-Kennedy debate that for people that are just listening to it, perhaps philosophy won. But for people that are in the room.
Experiencing.
Come on.
It.
Yeah. You're actually here. Improvising. Yeah. You both got to. Okay, so improv won.
Hmm. Yay,
that's my vote.
We won.
Do you have a tiebreaker? Do you agree?
Oh, well, I'm always for cats. That's going to be...
This live show was much better than cats. I will see it again and again. Hey, thanks for both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for everybody for coming out.
Thanks everybody for coming out.
It's just really cool to actually experience you, Mark.
Yes, and I'm much more comfortable now that you're sitting down. Because when we ran into each other, we're like, you're quite tall. I'm quite intimidated by your height. I didn't know that I was that, but now it seems more familiar with
only
it.
About an we got inch, some distance. Only about an inch.
Yeah, you guys are like distance. The same height.
It's close. I will say, as a tall person, slightly over above average height, 6'1", meeting taller people is strange. Like, wait, no, I'm taller than most people. Who are? What are you doing here? And I can like, I know everyone who's taller than me by name, Andy, Richard. You know, I know them. These are the people who are taller than me. These are the ones who win. No, I'm not.
All right. So if you're looking at the audio in your podcast player and you're seeing that there are 4 hours left in this episode to listen to, the rest is just naming all the tall people. So,
yes.
But I guess we need to give the stage to the green room that's going to happen.
Yes.
The regular thing. That this was an irregular thing. I hope to do it again sometime.
We'd love to do it again sometime. And thanks for coming out, y'all.
And wonderful to meet you, James. And thanks. Thank you so much.
We did it.
Wait, there's another person? Baby, I should sell my soul. Bankrupt. Bankrupt.
Bankrupt. You have worked so hard to make your business into a reality, but achieving your next business goal, that can be overwhelming. What if you had someone to talk through the options and the next steps with? Someone who wants to see your business succeed while giving you peace of mind. That's why the bankers at Merchants Bank are here, ready with exceptional service every step of the way. Let's dream together. Visit merchantsbank.com to get started. Merchants Bank is a proud member FDIC.
Hey moms, looking for some lighthearted guidance on this crazy journey we call parenting?
Join me, Sabrina Kohlberg.
And me, Andy Mitchell, for Pop Culture Moms.
Where each week we talk about what we're watching.
And examine our favorite pop culture moms up close to try to pick up some parenting hacks along the way.
Come laugh, learn, and grow with us as we look for the best tips.
And maybe a few what not to do's from our favorite fictional moms.
From Good Morning America and ABC Audio.
Pop Culture Moms. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.